Welcome to American Dreamland, a place where inequality thrives and cash controls the nation. The state of our country may seem hopeless, but I'm here to tell you the dream's not dead. Hello and welcome to American Dreamland. I'm DJ Scarlett, and on this final episode in my podcast series, I'll be talking about racism in the United States, as well as the meaning of white privilege, the myth of reverse racism, and what actions we can take to address racism in this country. The first thing we have to understand is that racism has not disappeared, despite what some people may say. When Obama was elected, I remember hearing people declaring that racism is finally over because we had elected a black president. The problem with this rhetoric is that racism is not over, and by claiming it is, we're normalizing racist behavior and systemic oppression in our society. Although movements like the Civil Rights and Black Panther Party paved the way for laws to be changed and new attitudes adopted, that doesn't mean that racism isn't prevalent in day-to-day life, as well as in our laws and politics. Just because we don't still see things like forced segregation and legal disenfranchisement doesn't mean racism isn't still a problem. What we have to understand is it has evolved. And although there are still many instances of blatant bigotry, we're also dealing with things like systemic racism and microaggressions. And what I mean when I say systemic racism is the fact that racism was built into our government, politics, and our culture. This is especially true in the United States, a country that was founded and built on the backs of slaves and over the graves of Native people. Racism is hegemonic and ingrained in our traditions as a country, our legal system, and our culture. Political activist Angela Davis once said, "In a racist society, it is not enough to be non-racist. We must be anti-racist." She's addressing the fact that the way the United States functions is inherently racist, and by accepting the status quo, we are participating in as well as enforcing racism. And it's not enough for us to not participate in racism, but we have to recognize the ways in which our society continues to perpetrate it and actively work towards dismantling that system. Not only is our political and judiciary system inherently racist, but our culture, as well as individuals, act in ways that continues to perpetrate racism. These actions are called microaggressions, and they are the small actions and beliefs we hold that allow racism and white privilege to continue in our society. Microaggressions may seem insignificant and might involve things like only using white actors, making generalizations based on race, or only supplying foundations with shades for light skin. But even though someone might brush these actions off as annoying but in the end unimportant, they work to reinforce harmful stereotypes and beliefs. If we allow these minor transgressions to continue, we're building the foundation that allows racism, disenfranchisement, and violence. We need to understand that how we think shapes our society and our world, and by participating in behavior that may seem insignificant, like adhering to stereotypes, these beliefs work to reinforce the beliefs of others as well as normalizes problematic behavior. Another very important aspect of modern-day racism is the idea of internalized racism. The fact is, it's pretty hard to be outwardly racist these days, especially in places like California. Most people would never identify as being racist and will actually get offended if they're called out for it. But just because being outwardly racist is looked down upon and not embodied by most people in our society, it doesn't mean that people don't hold racist beliefs. These beliefs are most likely unconscious, so often someone who doesn't identify as racist will hold a racist belief and attitude subconsciously. Even when they have these thoughts, it is often hard to identify them as problematic because it's been so normalized by our culture. The fact is, since our culture is inherently racist, we internalize stereotypes, beliefs, and norms without questioning them. So even if you don't identify as a racist, most likely you do participate in racist beliefs and behavior without thinking about it, because we all internalize racism in our society. This is a really important point because, as I said before, racism has evolved from outright bigotry to a systemic issue supported by microaggressions. Since we have all internalized racism to some degree or another, we act out these beliefs and contribute to a society that normalizes and accepts racism. So what are we supposed to do with this information? If we accept that racism is learned and internalized, we can address our own actions by recognizing when we have a racist thought or belief and working to unlearn our preconceived notions. In order to dismantle a historically racist system, we have to recognize our own microaggressions and work to actively unlearn them, if we are to make any sort of substantial change in our laws or policies. Enacting change in our country is not only working towards fair laws and policies, but also changing our culture and attitude. The only way we're going to get to a place where we're in a position to enact policy change is by changing our culture. And once those laws are enforced, they can only uphold law and not public opinion or action. This is why the first step to changing our society is recognizing the ways in which we have all internalized racism and how we can all contribute to a racist culture to some degree, whether we realize it or not. Enacting change in our country is not only working towards fair laws and policies, but also changing our culture and attitude. The only way we're going to get to a place where we are in a position to enact policy change is by changing our culture, and once those laws are enforced, they can only uphold law and not public opinion or action. This is why the first step to changing our society is by recognizing the ways in which we have all internalized racism and how we all contribute to a racist culture to some degree, whether we realize it or not. By recognizing these beliefs and actions, we can work on changing our culture and unlearning racism in order to enact large-scale social change through politics and law. Now that I've talked about internalized racism and microaggressions and how these things set the foundation for the continuation of a racist culture, I'm going to talk about the ways in which racism is perpetrated by our policies and government. Although there are countless ways in which racism is perpetrated by our country, I'm just going to focus on a few things, which are mass incarceration, police brutality, segregation, and disenfranchisement. I talked about mass incarceration in my podcast concerning our society's definition of crime. And as most people know, the American incarceration system is not only broken, but one of the many ways racism is so apparent in our country. According to the NAACP, the United States makes up about 5% of the world population and has 21% of the world's prisoners, with one in every 37 adults in the United States, or 2.7% of the adult population, under some form of correctional supervision. Not only are these numbers concerning in themselves, but the racial disparities in our incarceration system are shocking. In 2014, African Americans constituted 2.3 million, or 34% of the total 6.8 million correctional population, and are incarcerated at more than five times the rate of whites. Black people are not only unfairly targeted and abused by police, but once they are arrested, their treatment by criminal justice system is much different than their white counterparts. Time and time again, we see black people receiving much harsher and longer sentences for the same or lesser crimes than whites. One of the most visible and current forms of discrimination comes with the legalization of marijuana in California. Although I support legalization for many reasons, I find it insane that with these new laws, don't exempt those thrown in prison for marijuana from their sentences. While young white entrepreneurs are legally selling the substance, there are still people rotting in prison, a majority of them people of color, for weed-related charges. Not only does our criminal justice system continue to perpetrate racism, but our education and monetary systems do as well. Schools and cities are still segregated, not by law, but by district. We still see segregated neighborhoods with affluent, predominantly white communities living in the suburbs, while inner cities are mostly made up of people of color. Because of this community divide created by disenfranchisement, as well as discrimination in our housing and banking systems, children are also divided up in schools. Not only is segregation a problem within itself, but the disparity between schools and education is shocking. Not only are many inner city schools underfunded and understaffed, but the buildings are often falling apart and school supplies are extremely limited. This disparity between schools and education is especially troubling because education is the foundation for success, especially here in the States, where a bachelor's degree is usually vital in order to climb the economic ladder. These children in segregated schools are not receiving the same education as their white counterparts, and this not only gives white children a leg up, but ends up hurting children of color. It's crucial we recognize the ways racism is still perpetrated today, because even though there are no technical laws enforcing segregation in our society and schools, it's still happening and has real consequences. The final thing I'm going to discuss is white privilege, which, despite what some people may say, is a very real thing. For those of you who don't know, white privilege is the term used for the advantages of white people have in a society that centers around them. Some examples of this include featuring mostly white people in the media, supplying mostly white hair and beauty products, teaching mostly white history in school, or even more sinister things like racial profiling, police brutality, and economic disenfranchisement. White privilege is living in a society that centers around you and provides you with certain inherent advantages. This doesn't mean that being white exempts you from hardship in life, but it does mean that because of your race, you are awarded certain benefits in our society people of color don't enjoy. But because white privilege is so ingrained in our society, it's hard to recognize the privileges we're given, especially if we're going through hardships of our own. Being white doesn't automatically mean you'll be successful and that you won't face obstacles, but it does mean you won't face many of the obstacles people of color do. Along these same lines is the idea of reverse racism, which is the belief that people of color can be racist towards white people. I'd like to address this because even among people who are generally forward-thinking, I find many white people claiming they've been the target of reverse racism, which is impossible. And the reason why is within the definition of racism itself. Racism is historically enacted, culturally enforced, discrimination, prejudice, and systemic disenfranchisement directed towards someone because of their race. You can't be racist to a white person because there has never been white oppression, and our society and laws don't discriminate against white people. This doesn't mean that white people aren't targeted because of their skin tone or someone can't be bullied or picked on because they're white, but that's still not racism because it does not contribute to upholding a system of oppression and has no historical roots. Now that I've established that white privilege is real and reverse racism is not, I'd like to talk about how white privilege can actually be used for good. Since being white affords you certain platforms and advantages, those perks can be used to educate people on modern-day racism and stand up to inequality when you witness it. It's also really important to educate other white people about their privilege and racial issues because it's white people who need to change in order for society to become more egalitarian, not people of color. Like Angela Davis said, it's not enough to just not be racist. You have to be anti-racist in order to enact change. One way to do this is by policing your friends, acquaintances, and even strangers. If we let racist behavior or microaggressions slip by, then they become normalized and contribute to a racist society. We can't just forgive people's racism as a flaw and choose to ignore it, because the only reason we're able to ignore racism in the first place is because we are privileged enough to not have to deal with it. We need to make it hard for people to be racist in our society. So instead of getting away with bigotry, they'll be forced to question themselves when others reject their problematic behavior. Thanks so much for listening to my podcast series, American Dreamland. Remember, just because the state of our society may seem hopeless, doesn't mean we can't continue to fight for equality and justice. We have to remember that despite all that's wrong with our country, there's still hope, because in the end, the dream's not dead. This has been DJ Scarlett, signing off for the last time.